Hello, I'm Matthew Bannister, and this is Outlook. On the morning of the 26th of December 2004, a 9-magnitude earthquake took place beneath the Indian Ocean. A section of the Earth's crust, over 1,000 kilometres long, shifted and was forced up with a power equivalent to 23,000 Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs. The tsunami wave it triggered hit 13 countries, but by far the most devastating impact was on the coastal city of Banda Aceh on the Indonesian island of Sumatra. To mark the 10th anniversary of that tragedy, our reporter Candida Beveridge has visited the worst affected areas.
Sunday mornings at Lampok Beach in Banda Aceh are always busy. It's a perfect white sand beach with turquoise water. There are hundreds of families here today, children running in and out of the water and groups of young people sitting in beach huts playing guitars and singing songs. It's a favourite weekend destination. And it was here, 10 years ago at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, that the first rumblings of the massive earthquake in the Indian Ocean were felt. Within 10 minutes, tsunami waves had struck the Nicobar and Andaman Islands. 10 minutes after that, a huge 20-metre wave travelling at 500 kilometres an hour struck this beach with such force it swept away everything in its path. The devastation was unimaginable. The locals that are here today are the lucky few that survived.
Not long after the earthquake, people started screaming that the sea water was coming. We were confused, but then we saw the water gushing in.
Fishermen came running up to the street shouting, "Run, run, the water is on its way." But some people didn't believe them. And then it came. We were drowning. Me, my wife, my kids, all of us.
I didn't even know the word tsunami. I remember I heard it when I was at school, but then I never hear that term anymore. And that's why a lot of people were died, because they just didn't realize they should have run away from the ocean, but instead they approached and tried to collect fish.
Well, before the tsunami struck, Banda Aceh had a population of 230,000 people. Over 160,000 of them died, and the city itself was largely destroyed. First reports struggled to convey the scale of the devastation.
Extraordinary and haunting images for the people here, those who managed to survive. The mountains of water that came crashing all along the coastline. And when you go and see what's left, huge cars are crushed, boats were thrown kilometres away. It's absolutely staggering.
Today, Banda Aceh is unrecognisable. It's a city rebuilt with an infrastructure that could rival any modern city here in Indonesia. I'm starting here at the Tsunami Museum. It's a high-tech, modern building housing some of the most poignant images and artefacts from the disaster. I'm here to meet Sharifa Marlina. She's from Banda Aceh, and over the past 10 years, she's worked for several international and local aid organisations that have helped to put this city back together. Hi, Sharifa.
Hi.
This is the most amazing building, isn't it? It's a really modern building. Tell me a little bit about the history of it.
This is the tsunami museum. It's also functioned as the evacuation site should, you know, another tsunami happen.
Oh, so this is where everyone comes if there's another tsunami.
Yeah. It's interesting to see inside because the way this building is designed, it's trying to reflect on how people experience within that wave.
Right. Okay, shall we go in? We're just walking through this very scary tunnel with lots of water coming down, and this is meant to be the way.
You know, being in the dark, of course you feel that it's hard to breathe, and of course that's what people feel when they were in that wave, you know, on the 26th of December.
So we're inside a huge dome at the moment, and all around the walls are the names of the people who died. It's like a mausoleum really, isn't it?
Yeah. There at the top, it's Allah, it's God, so people believe they are already coming back to God.
Somewhere that people come, I suppose, to remember the dead.
Yeah, and also this became really a museum where, like, school would organize yearly visits, including, like, my kids.
This is children who've been born after the tsunami, a way of making them understand it.
Yeah, to make sure that they understand and they know what happened. Because I remember when tsunami happened, I didn't even know the word tsunami. I remember I heard it when I was at school, but then I never hear that term anymore. And that's why a lot of people were died on the 26th of December. They just didn't realize that there was a danger and they should have run away from the ocean. But instead, they approached the ocean and tried to collect fish.
Let's go on. Oh, my goodness, where are we now? Let's go through.
It's actually different areas showing the support that were provided by different international organizations or countries, as well as the tsunami memento.
Look at that. Look at the market. That's
the market. And just at the, at the end of this market, that's the Grand Mosque. But the water, it just didn't come in into the mosque.
Isn't that extraordinary? What do people here think about that?
Yeah, well, people think that it's got power, you know.
Do you believe that?
I do. Yeah, I do. Here, actually, they also have like a small theater where they show a movie of tsunami when it is happened.
Let's just have a look at some of these images.
International
assistance as well. And this is a particularly upsetting image here of a mother crying over her dead baby. It's just so heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it is. And like this, it was... You know, how could you imagine, like, seeing a mother, like, holding the dead bodies of her child?
It's just too much, isn't it?
Yeah. And I could still easily remember at that time when I saw a lot of people, you can't just ask for help from others because everybody must have somebody from their family or their relative being a victim, you know? So everybody was just taking care of their own family, and wherever they can help, they will help.
I can see that you're already, you're brought to tears. And
yeah. Whenever I talk about tsunami, I couldn't hold my tears. Although it's 10 years already now, like, I think everybody in Aceh would have the same feeling. Yeah, it was a big event. But, you know, people move on. And we need to move on. That we need to... continue to transfer this message to the kids, to our children, so that in the future we could reduce the risk.
Sharifa Marlina in Banda Aceh's Tsunami Museum. Well, the story of the tsunami is one of unimaginable loss, but also of extraordinary survival. The village of Lampulu is now known as the village with the boat on the house. An enormous fishing boat was carried inland by the wave and ended up stranded on top of a house. It saved many lives, including that of Fauzia Basaria. She lost her husband and both parents, but she and her children survived. Now she's one of the area's most successful businesswomen and runs a dried fish business. Candida went to see her and the boat.
As we walk down the street, I'm passing the boat, and it's extraordinary. It's huge. It's unbelievable that a boat could get on top of a house. Here we are at Fauzia's house, and there's the most amazing smell of garlic fried fish. It's delicious. And outside are four women all slicing up dried tuna, which then gets packaged and put into bags. And once they're packaged, they then go into boxes, and on the box is a photograph of the boat on top of the houses, which saved her life.
And the name on the boxes next to that photograph is Tsunami. Fauzia's business was born out of the tragedy. She told Candida what happened that day.
Ketika selepas gempa, jadi orang berteriak berlari.
Not long after the earthquake, people started screaming that the sea boat was coming. So all I could do was grab my five children and try and get somewhere higher. The first wave was very black. We didn't know if it was oil or water. The earthquake had destroyed a lot of the houses, but we managed to climb up to the second story of a building. But it was less than a minute before the water reached us. I thought it was Judgment Day.
And was the boat there at that point?
No, the boat didn't appear until the second, even larger wave came. By then we were floating with our heads touching the ceiling. The boat was up around our necks. And then we saw the boat bearing down on us.
It must have been an extraordinary sight to see a fishing boat sailing down the top of your houses.
People were screaming as it came sliding into the house, but then it got wedged on top of the house and stopped. My son managed to make a small hole in the roof, and he pulled us out one by one, and we got onto the boat.
And he saved your whole family?
Yeah.
Yes.
So when the water was coming up to your necks, did you think you were going to drown?
I put my faith in God. And when I got onto the boat, I just prayed and prayed. From the boat, I could see buildings collapsing and boats sinking with people inside them. There was nothing we could do. If it hadn't been for that boat, we would all have drowned. None of us can swim.
Were you thinking about your husband at this time? Because obviously he wasn't with you. You must have been very worried about where he was.
Yes, I was so worried because I didn't know where my husband was. And my parents too. They had run, but they were old. And I knew they would find it hard to escape. When the water had gone, we had to live in another village, but we kept returning to our village to look for our beloved family members. But we never found them.
Alzia is in tears now, and she's just wiping her eyes. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Although it's 10 years since the tsunami, when I talk about it, I feel as though it just happened yesterday.
The grief must have been terrible.
It was very difficult to raise 5 children on my own. Suddenly I had to work and support them and pay for their education. While we were living in a temporary shelter, I had a lot of help from aid agencies. The agencies taught me a lot of skills, how to cultivate fish, how to sew, how to make cakes, all sorts of things. And that's how I came up with the idea of starting a dried tuna fish business. I started with traditional dried fish products. I wrap it, put it in a box, and provide recipes of what to cook with it. I put a picture of the boat on the packet and called it Tsunami Dried Tuna. There's nothing like it here in Aceh, so it's very popular.
Why did you call it Tsunami?
Because we have the history. We were saved in the boat. We would like to remember this history. Every month we make a good profit, which is great considering we started with just 500,000 rupiah or $40. It's amazing.
And you work with local women around here to help them too, is that right?
Yes, we help our neighbors who are poor women. After they finish their daily chores at home, they get together here and help me, and I pay them a daily wage.
How is it to be a woman on your own now here?
Yeah.
It's very difficult because 5 children have 5 different problems. I pray for them and teach them to study and recite the Quran. I hope they will be good children.
So you never wanted to get married again?
No, not yet. My children are still very young. To bring them up with the new father would be very hard. I want to focus on raising them first. I want them to be successful, and it's easier to manage the business on my own.
There's such a delicious smell in here. It smells of garlic and tuna and so I'm just taking some out of the bag. Oh, that is so good.
This fish uses flour and a little onion.
Onion and flour, and then you fry it. That's so delicious. I would like to take some home with me.
We are not just producing the dried tuna fish. We also produce a cultivated fish called abon. Some people even take the tuna fish as a gift on their pilgrimage to Mecca.
That must make you feel very proud.
I am proud. But these are gifts from God, so I have to keep thanking him.
Fawzia Basharia. Well, the strong religious faith of the islanders has been one of the key factors in helping them rebuild their lives. Candida was taken by aid worker Sharifa Malina to see one of the mosques that survived in one of the worst affected villages, Lampuk.
This area was one of the areas which is the most devastating. And this mosque was the only building still standing at that time, like others are totally swept away.
Why do you think these mosques survived?
There are different reasons. First, of course, it has a religious value, mystical value here. You know, we believe that mosque as the house of God and God would protect it. But then on the other side, if you look at from social and psychological perspective, people who have constructed the mosque, they would do it, you know, making sure it's strong. They're not going to corrupt the money from the mosque. So the quality of construction is also good.
How much do you think religion has played a part in helping people get through the tsunami?
I would say that religion is the most important factor that helped people to recover. For us as a Muslim, we believe that whatever we have, children, husband, family, or asset, it's not ours. God gave it for us, like, to use that and to have it for now, and he could take it whenever he can. And that's one of the beliefs that help us, you know, recover that, you don't own that, actually. So you don't have to be sorry for it, you know. And we call it in Islam, we take a hikmah. Hikmah is actually you took a lesson from whatever happened to you.
But do you really think that if you had lost one of your children in the tsunami, that you could forgive God for that?
Yeah. Whatever God did to us, we believe that's for the betterness.
And you could really find a positive outcome from losing a child.
Yeah. Also, there is a belief for us that the children, especially like little children, if they passed away, they are actually the one who would be waiting for us in the heaven, who would, guide you to the heaven.
I'm Matthew Bannister, and this is Outlook, with a program recorded in Banda Aceh, Indonesia, marking the 10th anniversary of the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami. As one of the worst affected villages, Lampuk has taken the longest time for the community to come back together. New houses were built, but with most of the original inhabitants gone, the few who were left were too scared to live so close to the ocean, and the houses stood empty for many years. Some are still unoccupied. One man who did come back, though, is Harun, a teacher who taught at a local school. He lost his wife and three children, but is now remarried and has a 7-year-old daughter. Candida went to meet them in their new home.
Hello. She's absolutely amazed. She can't believe that we're here. You're in class one.
Harun's new home is a picture of domesticity. His immaculate garden is blooming with tropical flowers and neatly planted vegetables. On the veranda, his daughter is playing with her friends and laughing at the chickens as they try to peck her feet. And it was an ordinary day just like this, he says, when 10 years ago he felt the ground shake.
At first there was a small earthquake, then after that a very strong one. I saw the whole landscape ripple, then the sea went out really far. I heard a very loud explosion twice from the sea. People thought there was some sort of gunfight. It was just like a bomb exploding. And because there was war at that time, that made sense. And then there was such chaos you can't imagine. Fishermen came running up to the street shouting, "Run, run, the water is on its way." But some people didn't believe them. And then it came. Suddenly the whole family was under the water. We were drowning. Me, my wife, my kids, all of us. I grabbed onto a coconut tree and prayed to God to save me. And then a wave 7 meters high came and pushed me down. I thought I would die. I held onto a plastic petrol can and tried to swim to the hill. It was really difficult to do, but I made it.
Did you ever find your wife and your children?
I found the body of my eldest child, but not the others. They all died. So did my wife. I thought that day was the end of the world. The sorrow was so great. I just had to resign myself to God. I had lost everything. I had nothing to wear, nothing to eat, no home, but I felt lucky to be alive.
Around 45,000 more women than men were killed in the tsunami, and in some communities like Lampok, entire generations of children and old people were wiped out.
Not as many women survived as men. In this village, only about 60 women survived, and only about 30 young people, and there were no old people left. Everyone over 50 years old died.
How long after that then did you meet your new wife?
I met my new wife about a year and a half later, and I got remarried. Getting married then was very difficult. Many people simply remarried to stop their terrible sense of loss.
Did you fall in love? Was it like meeting your first wife, or was it a decision that you made that you would come together to look after each other?
It was a very simple arrangement. I asked my wife to marry me, and she agreed.
And tell me, you were a school teacher. What was the school like after the tsunami?
The school was in a terrible state after the tsunami, and very few students survived. In a school where I had taught in the past, there used to be 700 students. After the tsunami, there were only 150. The elementary school was even worse hit. Before, it had 300 students. After the tsunami, only 2 students remained.
And what's it like to live here now? I mean, for a long time, these houses were abandoned, weren't they?
I moved to this house 2 years after the tsunami. But very few villagers came back. They were too scared because it is so close to the sea, and there weren't many of us left. And I think the people of Lampok felt trauma so badly. If there is any loud noise, people run. They are easily panicked and rush around shouting, "Where's my child? Where's my child?" Lampok is very different now. Before the tsunami, the Lampok villagers were like a big family. They were cousins, brothers and sisters. The whole social structure of the village has changed. There are a lot of people from outside now.
Are you happy here now?
I'm not really happy to live here now. The people who are here now don't do much for the community. The people who lived here before were more educated and experienced. They have gone in the tsunami.
Do you think of your wife and children still?
I remember, but I don't want to remember forever because it makes me feel sad. I just believe in God and I pray for them. God made this happen and I have to accept it. If I had lost everything due to the civil war, it would be different. But this was God's decision. We have nothing to fear. God is looking after my family.
Teacher Harun speaking to Candida Beveridge. If you'd like to see some of the people we've been talking to, there is a photo gallery on our Facebook page, including dramatic pictures of the boat wedged on top of the houses and of the Tsunami Museum. This is Outlook from the BBC.